Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined today by Denny Carter. We will be discussing my recent general manager rankings before welcoming in Lawrence Jackson to examine some players whose summer ADPs have been falling. That includes J.K. Dobbins, Leonard Fournette, maybe Treylon Burks, who Treylon Burks' ADP has been on quite a ride.
It really has.
He should consider breathing normally, apparently. I say this as a fellow asthmatic. Yeah. Although my doctor is saying I can maybe stop taking my Symbicort, Denny. So that's
Although, listen, I did. You have asthma, so you can speak terribly of people who have asthma.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But I did read an ESPN piece yesterday that said that Treylon Burks is watching the film. So that's good.
Good. So you know. A running theme real quick before we get started this summer, Denny, has been your newfound interest in baseball. Orioles fan since 69. And you know who else is interested in baseball, apparently, is A.J. Dillon, who made quite a scene recently in a minor league baseball game. I hear you have some thoughts on this.
So if you haven't seen it somehow, if you have not seen it, it's been very viral, which is a level of viral that you don't often get.
High viral load with this clip.
Exactly. Like COVID type stuff, and AJ Dillon did the Oklahoma drill with a poor, unsuspecting mascot for a local minor league.
Do you remember what kind of mascot he was dressed up as?
He was dressed up as an eagle. And so here's what happened. So the Oklahoma drill, for those who didn't play football like me and Pat growing up, the Oklahoma drill is where it's a barbaric thing where two football players lie down on their backs about, I don't know, 10 feet, 15 feet from each other. When the whistle blows, they hop up and they charge at each other and they try to mangle the other person. So I actually did that once. I have to say,
I played the Oklahoma drill.
I played tackle football when I was 12 years old.
You try to pretend your T levels are low and you've done an Oklahoma drill.
And my dad said he was like borderline having a panic attack as I was lying, because he was like, he doesn't have it in him. Like
he knew your T levels. Like, he knew your dog levels.
The dog. Yeah. He knew there was no dog that resided in me. I took out the kid. I'll just say that I took him out. He was hurt. I felt bad. I never did it again. Anyway, let's back. AJ Dillon hops up. AJ Dillon, for reasons unknown, goes 100% at this mascot who can't weigh 150 pounds and absolutely levels him. I mean, like parallel to the ground, like Derrick Henry grabbing Josh Norman and throwing him into the air, that type of thing. Only Josh Norman is way, way bigger than this mascot. So mascot gave an interview. He's okay. He actually was most concerned. Get this. The Athletic had a piece. The mascot was most concerned with his head flying off, because he said, I didn't want the children to see the mascot without the head. So he was committed. Yeah.
I mean, that's like what you do. I mean, it takes 3 years to get your mascot license. Day one of class, they drill that in. If the head ever comes off, you turn in your badge and gun.
Right.
Mascots are issued a badge 2 weeks from graduating. They're issued a gun on day two, actually. But yeah, if the head ever comes off, the kids see your face, you're done. You never work in this town again.
So, you know, I do the Adjust the Rank segment, obviously, for NBC Sports Edge. My takeaway here, if we're going to have a takeaway, is that AJ Dillon has, as the kids would say, zero chill.
No chill, yeah.
None.
Very low levels of chill in the clip. By the way, it's a kingfish, not an eagle.
Shoot, I don't know why I said eagle.
It's a kingfish.
I was so sure, too. AJ Dillon, lots of dog, no chill. So, you know, we have to adjust for this. Also, I don't see, if we're talking about the Green Bay backfield, and we've talked about that a lot this offseason, I don't see Aaron Jones doing this. I don't see him taking out people on the street in the Oklahoma drill. Where's he? Is he just dodging? Is he unable to do it? I think we have questions to ask.
Yeah, I mean, so why isn't Bernie the Brewer on a stretcher because Aaron Jones stiff-armed him into oblivion at a promo at a Milwaukee Brewers game?
We're only asking questions.
Yeah, Bernie the Brewer needed to be on a gurney, and instead he's just going around Miller Park or whatever it's called now, celebrating home runs like normal because Aaron Jones doesn't have enough dog in him. And it's really, frankly, sad.
We have to wonder if he does have, you know, AJ Dillon levels of dog. I don't think he does. You know, if you watch the clip, it actually is a little much. Like, if I were AJ Dillon's friend or confidant or somebody, teammate, I would be like, AJ, that was truly wrong. That was not cool. That was not okay.
Well, you know how this actually went. Like, when they're planning this promotion, you know, the guy's like, yeah, just don't take it easy. Don't take it. You know that AJ Dillon's probably like, yeah, you know, I'll stiff arm you, but we're going to make sure no one gets hurt. And, you know, like, the guy and all the promo people are like, no, do the real thing. They want the real thing. And AJ probably after like 20 minutes of protesting is like, all right, I'm going to knock this guy's head off.
See, this goes to show. And sometimes these conversations flare up on Twitter where people will say, well, do you think you could make one tackle in the NFL? Like, if you were able to play a whole season. Well, you wouldn't be playing a whole season because you would be in the hospital.
Yeah.
Okay? And the answer is no, you could not tackle an NFL player. You couldn't do it. Like, you would be putting yourself in mortal danger. I believe if I were hit over the middle of the field, like one of those blindside shots to the neck of the head.
You actually would die.
I'm dead. I'm dead. Period.
And I was trying to think of players if I was forced to put in a situation where I had to try to tackle someone. I was like, I wonder if I could tackle Braxton Berrios. Then I just remember that guy's like a fire hydrant. And no, yeah, he would also kill me.
No chance. No, I thought you were going to say Tutu Atwell.
I actually almost went with Tutu Atwell, but I'm not as familiar. And I haven't seen him play enough because he only played like 10 snaps last year. But Braxton Berrios, I mean, that guy maybe tiny, but yeah, he is like just a fire hydrant running around the middle of the field. And he would immediately turn my lights out.
He would lights out for sure. The dog algorithm likes Berrios a lot, I will say.
You know, and even if I had enough dog in me, it would be barking in heaven after encountering Braxton Berrios' level of dog tackling me over the field.
So, killed by a slot
receiver. One of those, my hologram dog ascending into heaven. I'm like, well, I gave him appropriate dog levels for a long time when he played softball in FIFA, but he wasn't ready for Braxton Berrios.
All dogs within us go to heaven.
All dogs do go to heaven. I've heard sheep go to hell. That's a Cake song. The Zoomers have no idea who Cake is.
Zero.
They have horns in their songs. Yeah.
Cake is good. Yeah, they have brass instruments. Brass instruments are also a thing that Zoomers may not know.
The Zoomers would not be ready for Cake. Are the Zoomers ready for GM's talk?
Yes.
We're talking about last week on NBCSportsEdge.com, I published my annual compendium of general managers where I ranked the 27 returning general managers. I did write-ups on the 5 new general managers. It's a very tough exercise, as you might expect. And Denny has some questions. So, Denny, you can get the show going.
I do. I love how the reaction to your general manager rankings are so volatile. You have people saying, oh, hey, this guy from NBC ranked our guy really high. Good for him. He's good. He knows what he's doing. And then on the opposite side, you have other people who are furious. I mean, in the starkest terms, very upset with you.
And it's always, by the way, the biggest reactions are always either to the very best GMs,
yeah,
or like the very worst. Like Bill Belichick, I actually understand why he's becoming more polarizing, divisive, etc. But I mean, I have people tweeting at me like Bill Belichick, you know, is like the guy who traded Babe Ruth to the New York Yankees for like a watermelon. You know, like he's like never accomplished anything. I'm like, I don't know, man. Maybe we should give Bill Belichick a little benefit of the doubt. And like, yeah, he did just make the playoffs with a rookie quarterback too. Might be a sign that he's still kind of good. And so people get really mad about like the GMs at the top, and they get really, really mad. Like Seahawks fans have been up in my business.
Oh,
John Snyder. Other people were up in my business for years. Like, you're leaving John Snyder too high. You're giving him too much benefit of the doubt. So I give him the benefit of the doubt since like the second George W. Bush term. And I finally, this year, I like cut the rope. I'm like, all right. I mean, like there's the guy, they traded Russell Wilson. Like they're admitting defeat. They're admitting, yeah, they have no clue what they're doing. And now I'm getting all this grief because John Snyder is too low.
All right. Well, let's go. I was going to save the Seahawks for last, but you know, since it is fresh on your mind and we're talking about it,
I'm not mad. Don't put it in the paper that I was mad.
I mean, I never got the sense that you were mad except for all of yesterday and then this morning. I guess it is the Russell Wilson trade that prompted you to do this, because as you say in your piece, it is probably a cardinal sin to give away your franchise quarterback, the greatest player in franchise history, hands down.
Well, yeah, and just so the two signature moves the Seahawks front office has made the past 3 years are, they put in the article, trading two first round picks for a safety and then receiving two first round picks for, like you said, is the greatest player in franchise history. And we all know like the context that this is occurring in. We're like, the Seahawks had all-time good drafts, basically, the first few Russell Wilson years, where they're getting Russell Wilson, you know, they're finding guys like Richard Sherman, like Cam Chancellor, they're finding guys like in every round, you know, built like a true championship foundation, and just never ever kept up with that. And like the kind of team that trades, like they've traded their first round pick a lot, so a lot of times they don't have first rounders, and then they're always going, no matter where their first round pick is, they're always going off board.
Yeah,
people like, you know, Malik McDowell or Rashad Penny or LJ Collier. And, you know, it was really, really bad picks and have just never came close to replenishing the cupboard, which is very difficult when you're always picking, you know, like low in the first round. It's hard, but they got this amazing early foundation. They just like never adjusted though. They have never changed their approach. And the roster is just like decaying now.
Sure.
And like they're finally getting some picks back, but it was because they traded Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's a very, they had no like plan B. I mean, plan A was very good, but they've had no plan B. Whereas like Bill Belichick, you know, has had plan Bs for years. So,
I mean, the franchise did this offseason is they sided with Pete Carroll, a 70 something year old head coach,
literally the oldest coach in the league,
whose ideas about the league and an offensive approach surely are, you know, politely outdated. Okay, this is played as I can say it. They sided with him over Russell Wilson, who is, conservatively a top, what, 8 or 10 quarterback in the league.
I'm sure, and you don't even think he's good anymore, but yeah.
Well, I have some questions. I actually think, okay, so hear me
just
out.
Just asking questions.
I'm only asking questions, okay, like any congressman would. Maybe the Seahawks pulling the plug on Russell Wilson is a sign. That's all I'm saying. That last week when we talked about Russell Wilson, that's what I was saying is like
it is true. We don't even explore that avenue at all. No one even considers what if they're right.
Yeah, if they're right, man, this is gonna look really good. And obviously they're gonna go into, I guess, a rebuild. But then again, if you keep Pete Carroll, I would have been okay. And I know they're trying to please me most of all. I would have been okay if they had traded Russell, fired Pete Carroll, and just started fresh.
Yeah.
That's, it doesn't make any sense to me that they're going to try to ride out this Pete Carroll era. It's over. It's been over.
And too, the thing about pivoting to the run, like say that, yeah, they say this, that it's been clear for whatever reason, Russell Wilson was just not going to remain with Seattle, which he wasn't, but it was because of Pete Carroll. But you're not going to fire Pete Carroll. You have to move on. You're going to like pivot to a new approach. You know, they're clearly pivoting back to ball control offense, which only works if you have a good defense, and their defense has been hellaciously bad the past several years. And the reinforcements did not arrive this offseason. They had to use their first round pick on a tackle, something else the front office has neglected for years and years and years, the offensive line. And so, yeah, their backup plan, you know, establishing the run, using a top 40 pick on a running back, even though they just had a running back who they used a first round pick on, finished the season very strong, makes no sense. They don't have the defense to pair with it. And it just seems just a horrible, horrible vision. And yeah, I mean, Pete Carroll is an all-time great football coach, but he seems out of ideas. And
yeah, to move on. Eventually that does happen to everybody. All right. Before we get too bogged down with the Seahawks, I want to get on to
20 more minutes of Seahawks talk. I'm going to start pulling up some tweets here real quick. Hold on.
Seahawks fans have been mad online since Marshawn Lynch was not given the ball at the goal line in the Super Bowl. Number 9, you rank John Robinson, general manager of the Titans. You say over the past 3 seasons, the Titans have won 32 games, earned the number 1 seed in the AFC, and reached the AFC title game with, of course, Ryan Tannehill. Now, something we've talked about, I believe, last season was it seemed like this Titans experiment with Tannehill has reached its peak. There is nowhere else to go, and they are still very much committed financially to Ryan Tannehill going forward. So while there has been success, like regular season success, do you think that John Robinson's kind of legacy here with the Titans is teetering on the edge?
I do. And I can't just quite figure out his legacy. He was one of the guys I moved around the most. You know, you do an initial rank, you start moving people around a little bit, because as you actually write the article and start like really digging into all the moves, all the draft picks, just kind of like the flow of the thing, people start moving around a little bit, like, oh, I can't actually have this guy ahead of this guy. And John Robinson was someone who I had like as low as like 12 or 13 a few times. He's someone I started writing the article, like, I think John Robinson's probably underrated, you know, like, because like I said, they've been a number one seed, they've reached an AFC championship, all with Ryan Tannehill. Like, you can't achieve those kind of things with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback unless you're building a really good top to bottom roster. But then they just kind of aren't the Titans. Or like, I feel like the Titans are just kind of incoherent, because they're like another team, they keep bombing like their biggest decisions, like their first round picks, like Isaiah Wilson, you know, isn't even on the team anymore, despite being picked like 18 months ago. Caleb Farley lived up to like his pre-draft billing of having like durability concerns. The Julio Jones trade was a disaster. You know, they're constantly on defense. They're like one of the ultimate like duct tape and glue defenses, where they're kind of just relying on Mike Vrabel to whip it into shape. And it's just like not even that great of a roster. But like, clearly there's something going right here, because you're not making these, you know, getting these seeds, winning these playoff games by accident. But basically it was kind of hard to identify what exactly was making John Robinson such a good GM the past. So I kind of like had to hedge.
Yeah, sure.
And have him like 9-10. And yeah, I don't know what, I mean, what do you think, like, would this roster like instantly be like, do you think like it's a roster that's like a quarterback away, and this would be like a Super Bowl, like in the Super Bowl type of roster?
I do. And I think that by the end of this season, or maybe even the middle of this season, honestly, we'll look back at the Titans collapse against the Bengals last year in a home game when they were favored. I think that we'll look back at that game as the end of the Tannehill era in Tennessee. I don't think there's any coming back from that.
No,
it was a
and they would have won if he had only thrown like 2 picks.
Just terrible. I mean, he regressed to rookie year Miami level Ryan Tannehill in that game. And I think that it just, they bumped up against the ceiling, like boom, like, oh, what is that? Oh, that's the ceiling. We can't go any higher than this. So I think we'll look back at that. And also, you know, look, building an offense completely around a generational running back and Derrick Henry is going to work for a short time. But man, when Derrick Henry starts falling apart, and he will, because he's a human at last check and not a machine, and he had a foot injury last year. He missed 3 games, 4 games, whatever. When that happens,
missed 8 games, actually.
Wow. I don't know how I didn't know that.
That's all right. Might have been 9. He missed 8 or 9.
I think I was in a coma.
You've been fired, but that's fine.
Well, I think that it's very precarious situation for the Titans this year.
I know you didn't have to, like, you haven't been, like, examining the nuts and bolts, but, like, do you think John Robinson is a good GM? Or
yes,
or has he just been lucky? Has he just been lucky, basically, that Derrick Henry, I used the term model breaker in Monday show. Is John Robinson's tenure basically boiled down to Derrick Henry being a model breaker and the rare running back you can actually build around for a short amount of time?
Yes, and I think you have to recognize that John Robinson, among others in the organization, recognized that Derrick Henry is a model breaker.
That's true.
And so recognizing that is part of the deal. Like, it's true. part of the success. So I think it's fine. I think he's probably a top 10 guy, but I don't know how much time we have left here, but I wanted to ask you about one more.
You can ask me a few more if you want.
All right. Number eight.
Just if you want, I don't mind like sitting here and just like, you know, I'm just doing this for fun. Like, it's not like everything to me opining on my article.
We're going to go 1 to 32.
All right. All right. That's what I was secretly hoping you'd say.
This is going to be a 4-hour podcast. Howie Roseman, general manager of the Eagles.
That's a tough one.
You have a number eight. It is. Yes, it is tough. But here's the thing. He keeps making moves that get the Eagles back to the postseason. And even when they enter regular seasons, like, seeming like the worst team in the NFC East, and they find a way. I think that, like you pointed out, the Jalen Hurts pick, kind of a risk-free pick, and it has, you know, worked so far. Here's the thing, though: if it doesn't work long term, they're okay. They're loaded up with picks. They can move on from Hurts, and that is a luxury that not many teams have because they don't do this sort of planning. I think that Howie Roseman does. So were you tempted to push him further up the rank or are you comfortable with him?
Yeah. He's someone who like ping pongs around every year and because he's so hard to pin down. Cause yeah, there are some like low lows, but like, yeah, basically what you had to focus on is like made the playoffs 4 times in the past 5 years. He's already successfully rebuilt twice since firing Chip Kelly, you know, where like they rebuilt for the Doug Peterson era. They're already rebuilding on the dismal end of the Doug Peterson era. There's, of course, Lombardi trophy mixed in there. And Howie Roseman kind of runs into the problem where he has like very visible flaws. Where like he like keeps, you know, like the Patriots keeps messing up his receiver selections.
Right.
Like, so he has like this very visible flaw that's like easy to fixate on, but he's like the classic. He always makes sure the offensive line and the defensive line are like stockpiled with talent. And he just kind of hopes the rest will work itself out, which can lead, you know, like some years where you have like, no, you have a horrible secondary. That's happened several times too. Or you have a horrible receiver core. But his philosophy seems to be just make sure I have as much talent as possible on the lines. Like just by the law of averages, some of this other stuff is going to work out in these other position groups. Invest the most resources in the lines. And then, yeah, like too, like Jalen Hurts probably wasn't his long-term plan, but since there was more success than expected, he's giving it a whirl. But then if it fails, yeah, he already has the escape hatch and two first-round picks again next year. And it is just basically a masterful job of, like, keeping the rebuild, so to speak, going on the fly, like in a salary cap league where, by definition, there's just going to be so much roster turnover. And so it can be easy to forget how good he is because every once in a while they'll have, like, you know, like a horrible 6-10 season. But he seems to be an elite GM, Denny.
I do think he is. I have to say, I was looking at some analytics yesterday, and
you're fired.
I'm sorry. And some film. I also watched some film, and by that I mean 80s horror films. I
did. Of course.
But here's the thing about pouring resources into the offensive and defensive lines. It works because, I mean, if you pour them into the right resources, but it works because giving up sacks is so detrimental to a team's expected points added per play or per drive. And sacking the opposing quarterbacks, recording sacks, is so advantageous to the defense. It's a huge factor that I think maybe kind of goes overlooked. So you're right. The Eagles offensive line always at least pretty good, sometimes elite. The defensive line, same thing. So maybe other GMs might want to take notes.
And like one final word too on like Howie Roseman and like Bill Belichick, or like Bill Belichick again has so many like known flaws. Or like he can't draft receivers. He's addicted to like small school people, like way off other people's boards. Yeah. Like, does not need to be taking Cole Strange in the first round. That's also just partly a product of being around. Like, they're around, they've been around long enough for us to actually identify their flaws. And we know that, like, no GM, every GM is going to have holes or, like, blind spots in their roster building. And, too, I've had to try to kind of remember to accept that with people like Howie Roseman and even, like, Rick Spielman before he's fired by the Vikings. Like, yeah, there's stuff he's not good at. But the reason he's been around so long is because he's good at more stuff than most GMs are. And we just – you can't – there's no perfect roster builder. And so, yeah, we know Howie Roseman's flaws, but we probably don't focus enough on his strengths, Denny.
All right. Anyone else?
Any other quick thoughts here?
I thought that your ranking of – where is it? Oh, of John Lynch at number five.
Well, that's also more of a Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, and you, I know you mentioned Shanahan along like with Lynch in the ranking. But I think that, that's one that could plummet depending on how – obviously how Trey Lance does this year. Because, I mean, you implied you hinted at it in the article. Like, that could prove to be a pretty critical pick. Like, that was a luxury pick.
Yeah.
And they may have blown it. Depending on
how it is, they're a very interesting front office. They've been very adept at like finding blue chip talent, and yeah, kind of staking it all on this like super super risky pick. By the way, that was one thing so hard about this art is like kind of like trying. Like I ranked John Schneider as the Seahawks GM, but I mean I could have probably ranked Pete Carroll as this because you know Pete Carroll might still have the most say there.
Yeah,
so it's very difficult to like say like who is like the true decider. Well, these teams, real quick before we get in Lawrence, we see you. You'll be in here soon. We can see him in the stream yard. He's just waiting. He's like a caged boxer waiting to be unleashed into the podcast. But like one or two guys, like, do you think Chris Ballard is a good GM? It's like taken as an article of faith that Chris Ballard is like an elite GM. I definitely don't think he's a bad GM.
No.
Is Chris Ballard actually an elite GM or is he someone whose reputation kind of like outstrips his actual accomplishments?
I think that, you know, they kind of didn't luck into Jonathan Taylor, but it definitely helps a lot to have Jonathan Taylor there to kind of compensate for the quarterback carousel that goes on behind him, or I guess in front of him, technically in the formation. Again, I've been watching film. I think that the Matt Ryan signing will, you know, really affect the way that we see and the football watching public sees Ballard in the Colts front office. I think it was a good signing.
I do too.
Not signing. I think it was a good, you know, acquisition, especially moving on. Obviously, you have to move on, especially when the owner basically makes you move on from Carson Wentz, then you have to go get somebody else. But I think Ryan fits well in that system. And I think, honestly, I think Frank Reich does a lot for Ballard.
He does.
In the way that we view the Colts front office, which is a little twitchy. I feel like the Colts front office is a little twitchy. And I think that that's reflected by the ownership.
Yeah, that's it. Ballard is a tough one to rank because the whole like 9 to like 15 region where John Robinson, Brian Gutekunst, Chris Ballard, Eric DaCosta, all guys I'm pretty sure are good. I guess I don't know about how do you say the Packers GM's last name?
Gutekunst.
Gutekunst. yeah, I've been to Germany. I'm half German, by the way.
That's interesting.
It's very like guys that we're pretty sure are good. But like, I feel like could go either way. Like Gutekunst could be fired in like 2 years,
right?
Like very easily,
right?
Chris Ballard probably couldn't be.
No,
but like Eric DaCosta, I'm pretty sure is good. But you know, they've won one playoff game in like 4 years since Ozzie Newsome left.
No, so he's good. I think
he's really good. It was another one of the fans were pretty mad, and I thought justifiably so. It's a tough exercise. There's only so high.
I think DaCosta's helped out a lot by the fact I think John Harbaugh is best coach in the league.
So yeah, he's an amazing coach. And you know who's an amazing podcaster is Lawrence Jackson. And absolutely, we'll be right back after this with Lawrence.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The Fantasy Football Expo presented by NBC Sports Edge is coming to Canton, Ohio, August 12th to 14th. Join some of the top experts in the country, including our very own, myself, Lawrence Jackson, Denny Carter, Patrick Corain, Kyle Dvorak, at the only true Fantasy Football Expo in the country. Tickets are available at thefantasyfootballexpo.com. Use promo code NBCPASS at checkout to save 20. Save $20. I should have. And I also was reading the copy blindly. I would have left Denny Carter out of the top experts in the industry.
Yeah.
I was just reading. It's like Ron Burgundy just reading whatever's in front of me.
Right. This is Ron Burgundy.
Lawrence, how are you doing? You've been in the StreamYard green room for quite a long time, but you're here to discuss players whose summer fantasy stock has been falling. But how are you doing today, Lawrence?
I'm good. You know, man, my pinky toe sore right now. I don't know where that just came from, but it's
Lawrence, it's July 19th. That's what, 12. We're only 25 days away from playing flag football in Canton, Ohio. Are you going to be healthy?
Yeah, you know, ice, rest, repeat. You know, I'm going to do what I got to do to be on the field for my team so we can go out here and run the table out here.
Is it fair to call you the captain of our team?
Yes.
I feel like you're the coach and the captain.
Yeah, I'm
can you tell us what to do?
We're going to have all the greatest Tecmo Bowl plays you ever could imagine.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? With the rules, you know, we got limited plays to have to score. So I plan on us needing only one play per possession to score a touchdown. we going to be all right. And at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying, we only going against, you know, like other fantasy analysts. You know what I'm saying? He's not real football guys.
The average fantasy analyst is 5'3". So
right. So we like LeBron James to them physically. You know what I'm saying? We just gonna impose our physical dominance on these people. May even take a few penalties. You know what I'm saying? Just so we could get those stiff arm on them fantasy analysts who be having them wild takes. You know, I gotta go searching on Twitter for that just to see who
the ones of them have been doing too many threads are gonna need a crackback block from
The ones with threads you already I'm
a message needs to be sent.
We gonna get all those threads out of the way that weekend, you know what I'm saying? So we're gonna be all right and the pinky toe gonna be ready to go. Believe good. That.
Denny's going to be like Warren Sapp on Chad Clifton.
That's
Zoomers
worst.
Don't know. That was a pretty bad one.
That's the worst thing I've ever seen.
Maybe look that up. That was dirty. Yeah. Pretty bad hit. But, yeah, Lauren, I mean, do we know any – you said Tecmo. Do we know any NFL blitz plays? Anybody remember some of those? Those were some
best play. You got the best on defense. You know, you got the best play in Madden on defense. Engage 8.
That's right.
You just blitz everybody except one guy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We will have one guy back there covering all 5 wide receivers, but it won't even matter because when we engage 8 or 4 or 5 or however many we allow to have on the field, it won't even matter. And can we rush the passer? No. But we gonna do it anyway.
And actually, Pat, I meant to catch you up on this, but Lawrence and I were talking for a few hours last night about some offensive strategy. We came up with a play where I get the ball, I jump on Lawrence's back, and he just takes me to the end zone. So I think that one will work.
That way we both get credited for the touchdown.
That's right.
That's true, but Lawrence has a bum toe right now, and Denny has a bum knee. I don't. Well,
that's why I need the piggyback.
This is shaping up. Lawrence, you need to be getting iced up. You need to be Russell Wilson levels of rehab, like 21 hours a day.
Yeah, all day, man.
To get the toe correct. So, Lawrence, we're here to talk players who, you know, it's funny talking about summer ADP because – nothing is really happening, and yet ADP still wildly fluctuates. Like, J.K. Dobbins has not taken a meaningful snap all summer, which I guess is maybe one of the reasons his ADP is falling. But, like, what is really different with J.K. Dobbins right now compared to, like, February or March? But he's the first player we're going to talk about. What is going on with J.K. Dobbins' ADP? Danny, maybe you can give us the numbers on J.K. Dobbins' ADP if you have it pulled up. But Lauren, then just like give us the lay of the land on Dobbins' ADP, and if you feel it's appropriate, if it will keep falling, maybe begin rising, where are we at with J.K. Dobbins?
Well, I feel like at like literally as of today, and you know, because of yesterday.
Take us through what happened yesterday real quick.
I feel like yesterday I've never seen an ADP seesaw so much, you know what I'm saying? Because and I'm talking about within minutes, within an hour. You know, because we get the report out of Adam Schefter that, you know,
Ian Rappaport, actually.
Ian Rappaport. You're right. I get them mixed up. We get the report that week one is in question and they're going to be cautious in his return, which I believe that to be so. However, you know, I think the key line in there that pissed off J.K. Dobbins was week one is in question. So he's like, you know what, man, let me dust off my Twitter real quick. You know, so let me get on here. I'm tired of being quiet. You know, he said a whole bunch of words, but the main thing J.K. Dobbins said was, I'm damn sure going to be ready for week one. And see, at that point, when that tweet came, then the ADP went up a little bit. See, it went down with the initial report, but then he brought it back up a little bit. But it's been, you know, his ADP been down this whole summer, this whole offseason, mainly because of the injury and because of, you know, the question about how much he'll be involved in a passing game because of, you know, the Ravens running backs involvement in the pass game in the past. So, you know, those two factors have had his ADP down low, and we haven't really had much news on J.K. Dobbins up until yesterday. So that would be, you know, that makes sense why his ADP's low. But him confirming that he'll be, he said, man, I might not even be on the PUP list to you know, start things off. So, I mean, for me personally, if I'm going into a draft and, you know, I may not be targeting J.K. Dobbins per se, but hearing him say that give me a hell of a lot more confidence than I had a month ago. You know what I'm saying? When you actually hear the player, now any player, you know, these dudes is the best, you know, physical specimens in the world. So they going to be like, hey, I'm good. You know what I'm saying? We going good. But the, you know, the matter of factiveness in which he wrote that tweet out there, like, you know, you may not be targeting him, but you might get to, you know, you might be in that sixth, seventh round and, you know, be like, hey man, this is the top back in the Ravens run oriented offense. Let me go ahead and take a shot on J.K. Dobbins.
Yeah, so Dobbins' ADP on Underdog has dropped about half a round over the past month, but basically it's been his ADP has been depressed for the entire summer. He's going as RB21 off the board, right around Josh Jacobs, Elijah Mitchell, AJ Dillon. So I think, you know, Lawrence mentioned the ADP fluctuations with the Twitter back and forth yesterday. I believe I was told for a moment Dobbins was dropping to like RB 27, 28. And then that jumped back up to like 21, 22. So I think it'll stay there for most of the summer, but I'm not comfortable drafting him there. If there is a chance that he's not going to be ready. And even if he is ready for week one, it seems unlikely that he's going to be used as we expect him to be used. You know,
I will say I am more comfortable after the tweet, which might sound kind of ridiculous. Like, oh, a player, like, of course he thinks he's going to be ready. Like, Lawrence kind of hinted at it. Like, both with J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, like, we have not been getting, like, concrete updates, like, at all. Like,
nothing
all year.
Nothing on Gus.
The Ravens have been keeping it, like, really close to the vest with their updates and their running backs. So it was very interesting to see a very forthright update from the player himself. And I don't think he could be so wildly off to say he might not even begin camp on the PUP list and then somehow not be ready for week one. Like, that did make me fairly confident that he will be ready for week one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that tweet was like the equivalent to like punching somebody in the face. Like, if he'd have been right there with him, instead of saying that, he just would have punched him right in the face. Like, I'm going to be ready for week one.
Mm-hmm. He would have Oklahoma drilled him. Just like, and that is the thing. Yeah. Why isn't J.K. Dobbins out here stiff arming, you know, like the Oriole mascot if he's truly healthy? So. He needs to get on AJ Dillon's level.
He was like, hey, man, he said, hey, I would be posting videos, but Jesus, you know, what he said. It was, he said him, hey, so, hey.
It had a religious fervor to it. It's true.
Yeah, apparently the Orioles mascot is only called the Oriole Bird. He needs a name because he's about to get demolished by J.K. Dobbins.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't need a name. He's perfect as he is. He needs a name. Orioles.
And he's about to get sent into outer space by J.K. Dobbins' stiff arm. So, Lawrence, who is the second player whose summer ADP has been taking a hit? I was trying to think of a horrible pun. Who's the second player, Lawrence?
Treylon Burks.
Yeah.
You know, he got drafted. A.J. Brown got traded. We already knew what it was. It's like, hey, he here to replace this guy. And we saw that A.J. Brown had immediate impact as soon as he got on the field for the Titans. Didn't matter if they was a run-first team. He was far and away their guy. And, you know, that's why they brought in Treylon Burks. But then, you know, he started being on the sideline too many times with running out of breath or whatever. He got that asthma. So, hey, that'll scare folks off a little bit. That'll even in, you know, June and May and during mini camps, that will scare people off. So my thinking about that is my approach is I'm just waiting to see what happens in training camp. You know what I'm saying? Like, how many reps is he getting in training camp? And are they, you know, monitoring his reps in training camp due to, you know, whatever issue he may have, whether people would be saying he out of shape. I don't know that. That just what people be saying in them Twitter streets and on TV, whatever. I want to see what he do in training camp. I want to see what happened when they get in these preseason games, how they prioritize him in the offense. The first preseason game when all the starters go out there for three snaps or whatever. will Treylon Burks be out there with him? Because he's going to play more than three snaps.
He's getting oxygen after one snap.
Yeah, you're right. If the TV go to him and he, like, had the oxygen thing on his face, they're going to make a big deal out of that, even though every player do that, you know? That was a lot of people, top rookie wide receiver, like, shortly after the draft with, like, Drake London behind him, and now people kind of fading off that. I would say just, you know, see how the beginning of this training camp goes, see how the beginning of August goes. Then when you get to your fantasy drafts in mid to late August, then you'll have a better feel for the situation and you know what's going on with him.
Denny, what is the ADP tail of the tape with Treylon Burks?
So we have Treylon Burks on Underdog dropping two full rounds since June 1st.
Wow.
Really steep drop. He's now going as the wide receiver 46 on the receiver happy Underdog platform. I will say that, you know, there were reports after he missed time in minicamp and rookie camp and everything and OTAs. There were then reports that said the Titans knew and every team knew that he had this asthmatic issue or breathing issue because he was often unable to finish private workouts with teams in the NFL draft process. So I know Mike Vrabel has been very close-mouthed, close-lipped about the whole thing. Doesn't seem thrilled with it. But I do think it is something to monitor this summer for sure.
It's also too, like, not that you're saying overreact to it, but like, he's not the first guy who like can't finish a practice in May, which is why it's kind of like insane.
It's a, I feel like it's a little different.
That is an interesting report. I actually missed that report.
Yeah. That's... Yeah. We blurbed it at some point, but yeah, I think it's a little different. Cause it's not like, you know, he just got out of shape.
Yeah.
Prepared for the draft or whatever. Like he has, this is a thing. And the team actually tried to keep it a secret, but then the receivers coach accidentally told the press. So I think there's a little something to this.
And wide receiver 46 seems low, but I get Robert Woods. We've been sleeping on like all summer. By the way, you said underdogs, a receiver happy platform. You can get Jonathan Taylor in the sixth round on underdogs. So it is a very receiver happy platform. Lawrence, the third guy, I'm going to tell you, because it's Leonard Fournette, right? Lenny has been some unflattering photos of Leonard Fournette. Lawrence, what is going on with Leonard Fournette this summer?
This one for me going to be really short and sweet there. I don't care if this man was 287 pounds.
Which is not far off, apparently.
This man is he has had a rebirth in Tampa Bay. Like, he looked closer to that, you know, top five overall pick that he was in Tampa Bay than he ever did when he was in Jacksonville. So, regardless of, you know, his potential 313-pound frame, as a professional athlete, they gonna find a way to get that right within a month. Like, he gonna be ready to go in a month. Now, he just got paid by Tampa Bay. You know what I'm saying? Tom Brady got him to come back. You know, he was enjoying the fruits of his labor. when it's time for training camp and, you know, and the season is upon us, he gonna be ready to go. He gonna be playing at about 240, maybe something like that.
Fairly high.
Somebody posted something that you know, he himself had put out a tweet that was like, I was already 245 last year, but then he deleted that. Like, somebody screenshot that, because, you know, people be caring about any player business. But anyway, I saw that. So I guess he was like, you know what, maybe let me take it down. I don't want people knowing I was actually 245. But whatever the case it was, he was balling, you know. So, I mean, he's going to be one of them big dude athletes that's just rumbling now. So, you know, the dip is on right now. The dip is on. You know, Rashad White, you're going to hear his name a lot. I feel like that's somebody you should be targeting later in drafts anyway, regardless of Leonard Fournette, of when he gets down to 195 pounds. Blazing by everybody.
He was 195-pound running back probably in like sixth grade time.
Yeah. Right.
And he was Oklahoma drilling people.
Yeah. So, you know, me personally, this weight on this player, I'm not too worried. I feel like Lenny, like a type of player who get chubby every offseason. I don't know.
It gets a little higher every offseason. Yeah,
I remember back in the combine, he weighed 240 maybe, and then he was like, that's water weight or something. And then he dropped about 6 pounds the next day and then ran a 4 or 5 flat in the 40. So as long as you come with that same speed, no matter what you weigh, I'm good.
I will say, he strikes me as like a game day player. Like, don't worry about me, I'll be ready.
Gamer. You know?
What is the ADP tail, Denny?
Yeah.
Or what was your thought? What were your thoughts on Lenny?
Well, look, I'm not going to make too big of a deal of the weight thing, because I think that it'll probably be a non-issue. The one factor that keeps cropping up for me is that the Bucs have a very hungry and capable RB2. And Rashad White, the first thing he told the Tampa Bay press was, I'm here to get the starting job. Like, I'm not going to be a backup. I you know, he has some dog, is what I'm saying. And I think Fournette coming and being out of shape, it's not the best start. But let me tell you about the ADP real quick. Pat, go ahead.
What kind of dog does he have in him? That's also important.
I mean, the way he came on talking like that, it sounded like Rottweiler.
Say, is he a poodle or pit bull? Rottweiler would be, we're really talking if he's got some Rottweiler in him.
Turns out Lenny's ADP has not really changed. Give the pictures time. Right. And but he is going as RB11. So actually it's dropped a little bit. He was RB10. It's RB11 right before Javonte Williams. I mean, he's in a part of the draft with Saquon Barkley. If it's Barkley, Fournette, Williams, like, I feel like, oh man, I don't know. I'd be hard pressed to take Fournette over those guys.
Yeah. Fournette too, though. I feel like there are players like this who they get away with it for a while. And then there's one year where they kind of like stop getting away with it.
Yeah.
And he's probably lucky that Bruce Arians retired, quote unquote, because not the kind of thing Bruce Arians would be a big fan of, but I just feel like he's playing a little bit with fire, Lenny.
I do too.
And you don't want to give anyone, it's the NFL. Like, don't give anyone an opening ever. Like you said, he gave the rookie like a kind of an opening.
I mean, but maybe because he's a Brady guy, it won't matter.
Yeah, maybe. No. Brady is like a mafia don.
That part is big.
Yeah.
That part is big right there. I mean, Gio Bernard, he's still on the roster. That's clearly because Tom Brady and Byron Leftwich like him a lot. So I honestly wouldn't even be shocked to see him getting reps early in the season. Like, Rashad White is good, and it's definitely somebody you should be targeting later in the draft just simply based on his skill set and what he could bring to that offense. But he's going to have to work for everything he gets, especially under a coach like Todd Bowles with a quarterback like Tom Brady. You're going to have to earn every single rep.
Lawrence, let's maybe do one more. One more dude who's ADP. We have a few more, but who's a dude whose ADP has been taking some summer hits here, and we don't necessarily know why.
Well, let's talk Amari Cooper then, because he's in the, you know, he in a wild situation that really don't even got nothing to do with him. Like, all he did was get traded to the Cleveland Browns with an elite quarterback when he playing on the field in Deshaun Watson. There seems to be right now a range of outcomes on that particular situation and would in turn affect Amari Cooper and other players on that offense, even the running backs and another guy like David Njoku. But the thing about Amari Cooper is I feel like anything having to do, because we know what he is and where he stands in that offense. We know he come there to be the top wide receiver on the team. We know his talent. We've seen what he could do. So what he's done is there. It's already, you know, written. The great variable is Deshaun Watson. And depending on how many games, you know, he play or don't play, that could, you know, that's going to affect Amari Cooper a lot, because when we talk in fantasy football here, six games is, that's almost half your fantasy season. Yeah. So, you know, there's the player there, and then you got the receiver, which is a dependent position. You need your quarterback. Now, I don't know what, you know, Amari Cooper could do on a week-to-week basis with Jacoby Brissett. What we know about Jacoby Brissett is he could come in there, he'll win you some, and you lose some. He got a strong arm, you know, and that's about that. You know, he's a solid backup in the league. But Amari Cooper's, you know, his weekly output could be a lot of up and down with that situation at quarterback, and that's primarily why his ADP is taking a hit. Now, it'll take a, you know, depending on what happened with Deshaun Watson, it could, you know, his ADP could go higher. So It just depends on that, really.
Denny, yeah. Would you consider Amari Cooper a top 30 receiver with Jacoby Brissett at quarterback?
No.
You wouldn't?
No, I think Jacoby Brissett is like, you know, bottom tier type starter in the NFL. Amari Cooper's ADP has dropped two full rounds.
Wow.
Since June 1st. He's now the wide receiver 31 off the board. You know, and I think it's justified. I really do. You know, it, without Deshaun Watson for some time, whether it's 2 or 4 or 8 weeks, whatever, whole season, I don't know. No one knows, seems.
Mary Kay Cabot on our Browns preview show did not know.
And did not know.
She's like as plugged in as anyone could be in the United States to the situation.
Yeah, I think I just don't see much value outside of like Nick Chubb in this offense if Deshaun Watson's going to miss significant time. I will say, you know, and maybe I'll explore this in an article at some point, Amari Cooper has some concerning splits with inside and outside a dome.
Really?
The man's not a fan of playing in the weather. And now you may have heard he plays in Cleveland, which gets, let's see, 4 blizzards a week from
like a lake effect hurricane, like every 48 hours. Yeah,
like games basically like almost have to be canceled from November 1st through January 1st in Cleveland. So I think he's just in a terrible spot.
Yeah, if I were Cleveland, I would simply consider getting better weather.
How about a dome?
Man, Amari Cooper is one of the he's just one of the strangest dudes in the NFL. He's had a long, strange trip of a career.
Yeah,
like
because he's had a 200-yard game. Like,
yeah,
looking like a top 3 receiver.
Yeah,
he's just had a very, very he's like a very good player who should have been elite and just like never quite got. He's like not elite. He's just a weird. He's at a very, very, very
short. Like at his best, he is hard to deal with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For a defense, like hard to deal with. But then if you get him in Philly, when Dallas, you know, need to win and get in the playoffs, might take himself out of the game. I don't know. I just go by what I see. Yeah. I'm for the players. I just go by what I see, and that's what I saw when it was cold outside.
Yeah. I still think the defining Amari Cooper play was when he was on the Raiders and there was this deep bomb where he was wide open and he didn't catch it. It like looked like he like lost the ball, but it's because it had hit a camera rope. I believe an NBC camera rope. Sorry about that, Amari.
Sorry, Amari.
And like that's just like, man, this would only happen to Amari Cooper, be wide open for a deep bomb and have her hit a camera cable. Yeah. And that's like the defining play of him. And we're sorry about our role in that, Amari.
Messing up the stats, man.
Yeah, we're really sorry about that, Amari. And we're also really sorry that the show is over. Thank you so much for joining us today for some GM talk, for some ADP talk, for some Lawrence, Pat, and Denny talk. I'm for Lawrence, for Denny. I am Pat, and we will be back with you later this week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.